Springfield's Talk 1041. I'm Nick Reed. You can subscribe to the show, Spotify, iTunes, in case you cannot catch all of it. Also, video, you can see in the studio as we do this show on Facebook Live, also KSGF.com, either of those two. The Facebook page, which is 1041 Nick Reed, there's a KSGF Facebook page, and then there's a 1041 Nick Reed Facebook page, and that's the one that we stream video and audio of the show, and that you can see archived shows on KSGF.com. There is the most recent show, and then once a new one starts, it goes live, and then that one resides there until the next one begins. So that's what you'll find there. And I know there are a number of other ways that you can also listen to us streaming, of course, through, well, all of those are streaming, but there's just countless ways, which is good. It's a very good thing. Well, and then of course, just the good old fashioned easy way that doesn't cost you a dadgum thing in the world.
The radio.
The radio.
Yeah.
It's free.
Still free.
Yep.
It's always been free.
Yep.
Always will be free.
It's very, you know, a lot of people, you know, there are more people listening to radio now than there ever have been. People think radio's dying. Well, I mean, there's more. Now, there are more people as well, and there are other venues for people to listen to things. But fact of the matter is, radio, all those other, you know, streaming and all these other venues, mm-hmm. you can listen to us there. So those are just basically radios for us, which is fantastic because it's just another way that we can reach people. But yeah, I mean, there are more people listening to radio now than there ever has been. And I've always said it is very, very difficult to get rid of something that's free.
Yes, it is.
It's free to people. It's easy and it's free.
It's one of the few
things in
life that
are free. You don't have to subscribe to anything. And of course, there are definitely benefits to different outlets in which you subscribe to things. But when you offer something that's of quality and it's free, now I say it's free to the listener. Advertisers pay, you know, the bills for us so that they can reach the listener. But for the listener, it's a free product, and that's hard to beat. And it's local.
Yeah.
You know,
can't,
I mean, that, yeah, you just can't beat local. I really think we are now television over the air. That can be free as well, and local news. But we are just so fortunate as a medium to be able to be local and free for people.
Amen, brother. Governor Parson faces off against State Auditor Nicole Galloway in November. The Associated Press has said both won their respective primaries by overwhelming margins. Also, voters say yes to several money issues in the Ozarks. City of Springfield gets the go-ahead to impose a fee for setting up a short-term loan establishment permit. The Southern Stone County Fire Protection District gets money for full-time staffing with approval of a 10-cent tax levy. And the Conway Special Road District Number 2 in Laclede County will continue a property tax levy. And it's a win for both Mike Moon and Carla Esslinger in their respective Republican primaries for state Senate. Moon defeated David Cole, Esslinger edging out Robert Ross by just 142 votes. And congratulations to Rusty McLaughlin, the former president of the Home Builders Association, winning over State Rep Sonia Murray Anderson for the Republican nomination for Greene County Commission District 1. He faces Democrat Wes Zonker in the general election in November. That is the latest news.
KTTS First Alert forecast. Sunny, a high near 80 today, 62 for an overnight low. Tomorrow, a slight chance of showers, thunderstorms. Otherwise, mostly sunny, high of 84. And Friday, showers and a thunderstorm possible with a high of 86. Still just 60. Very, very nice. Cattle Baron's Ball Digital this year. It's a 12th annual brought to you by Prime. And all the details for that you can find at KSGF.com. It's coming up August 29th. And they will, you know, be doing it digitally this year for obvious reasons and still looking to raise money, of course. The need is there. So that's why, although they've chosen not to do it upfront and personal, that the digital way is a way that they're hoping to raise funds. August 29th, American Cancer Society's 12th annual Cattle Baron's Ball. Details at KSGF.com. Let's go to the Queen City Motors talk and text line. Walter in Springfield. Welcome, Walter.
Yeah, you were talking about things that are free.
Yes.
Thank goodness that now all of our health care is going to be free.
Yeah, for a lot of people. I think, 220,000 they're estimating?
Yeah, about 230,000 people. We're going to spend about $18,000 per person on them when this thing goes into full swing. What I'd like people to do, I wish the media told us the truth, that maybe you could help get the information out there, but it's really too late. Just need to get the governor on the phone and just ask him point blank, what are you going to cut? What are you going to raise?
Yeah. I mean, that's a big decision. People don't realize that, and you're going to get different numbers, but the numbers that are presented are anywhere between a third and 40% of the budget. I mean, that's what we're talking about already. And they're going to add what they say is $200 million a year on this that we pay for on the state level. Now, the state, of course, one of the ways that they've pushed this is like, oh, don't worry, Missouri taxpayers, you only have to pay $200 million of this a year. The feds pay for the rest. Well, those are our tax dollars. We're still paying for it. So $200 million a year comes out of our left pocket. The rest comes out of our right pocket. But, you know, I mean... They're going to, I've said it before and I'll say it again, they're going to have to start selling a hell of a lot of lottery tickets in order to fund education because that money's got to come from somewhere.
Yeah, and that's only $200 million for the first 3 years.
Yeah.
And then it goes to at least $3 to $4 billion that we have to pay for.
Yeah. Yeah. Anytime the government makes an estimate, at least triple it, if not more. Yeah. Never have I seen a government program end up costing what they said it would. Yeah, it's a mess. Yeah, I mean, it is an absolute mess. And you just at some point you think, oh, we are so in over our heads. So in over our heads that I guess, does it even make any difference at this point? I mean, we're. But, of course, they say their position is the opposite of mine. It's somehow going to make money. It's going to create jobs. People are going to get healthier. One of the ways this is how they claim people are going to be healthier. And this is why, oh, it's going to save. Here's how it's going to save money, right? This is what they say. That a lot of people who don't have medical coverage don't go to the doctor for regular visits, or if they're feeling a little unwell, they go to the emergency room instead of the doctor, and so that costs extra money. But point is, they don't take care of themselves because they don't have insurance in order to allow them to go to the doctor, and so what ends up happening is they wait until they're really, really sick. And now these people are going to have Medicaid. And this is beyond poor people with kids. This is going beyond that. We're talking about now encompassing adults that don't have kids, that have financial means to do it. This is expanding who it is that's covered under this. And so now, theoretically, all these people are just going to start going to the doctor, because they're covered and they're going to start taking care of themselves. You know what else they said was going to do that? Obamacare. But it didn't work that way. And this is what some of these folks refuse to understand. The reason most people don't go to the doctor to take care of themselves, to have routine maintenance, if you will, and instead wait until it's unavoidable, isn't because it is financially impossible for them to do so. It's just because that, you know, everyone's different. Some people avoid doctors. Some people, they just are, you know, in their everyday life, living to sit. They aren't forward. They live day to day. They don't think long term. You know, these are people that live paycheck to paycheck. They never save money. They spend it as soon as they get it. These are people that will constantly go into debt when they don't have to because they want instant gratification. These are people that don't think long term. And so it isn't because they don't have the means or the ability to maintain the means. It's because that's just not who they are. And there is a certain level of arrogance in folks who think, well, if you just give them the ability to go, their entire mindset is going to change. And despite the fact that they aren't long-term planners in every aspect of their life, all of a sudden for their health, they're going to become that way. And they don't. That was one of the explanations when it came to Obamacare, when they claimed that the emergency room wait time was going to go way down because most of those people who were in the emergency rooms were there for things that regular doctor visits would take care of, but they didn't have insurance, and so that's why they didn't make a regular doctor visit. So if we force them to buy insurance and they have to have insurance, then they'll go to the doctor. Guess what they did? They didn't do that. Because that's not who they are. The mindset of people in government who want to constantly expand government control into healthcare, they see people as these robots, for lack of a better term, who will all behave the way, in their mind, they think they should behave. So what you do, you have these people who think, well, because they now have free health insurance paid for by somebody else, they should start taking care of themselves. And so because in their minds, that's how people should behave, they will. But that is a decision to ignore reality. That is a decision to live in a world of the way things that they wish things were or the way that they wish everyone would behave, not in the way that people actually behave. And it's one of the reasons that this is not going to make people healthier. And particularly given we're not talking about the single mom with three kids that barely makes $10,000 a year. Those people are already covered. This is expanding into people, for the most part, who, if they really wanted to, could take care of themselves financially when it comes to their medical needs. And, that's not a priority for them. This is going to end up further straining the system, and it is not going to make people any healthier, and it is going to cost a lot more than they said that it's going to cost. And this is the exact same story for every single time government gets involved in any sort of area. In this case, you know, once again, medicine and doctor's visits and so forth, but we just do it over and over and over and over again. And the outcome is the same every single time, but we'll do it again. And we'll do it again. We'll do it again. And this is now, you know, it's part of the Constitution, which, by the way, even if you support this sort of thing, the Constitution is not the place for this. But why should we let that get in the way? I want to play a little bit of audio for you coming up. And it's just a little bit of audio about Herman Cain. And it is, to me, genuinely sad to see the lavish praise that continues for a politician who, as a politician, did not really do anything to benefit any Americans, let alone the African-American community. While somebody like Herman Cain, who is a tremendous example for all people, not just the African-American community, but all people. And I mean, I'm watching and there's, I saw advertised, I think even tomorrow, there's a whole, or maybe it was last night, a whole nother 1 or 2 hour special on John Lewis. Oh, mostly it's clips of him just talking. Not a list of accomplishments. I'm talking about his life as an elected official, not back in the 60s when he was, you know, participating in marches and so forth. But I'm talking about what the big focus is, and that's what he has done and given as an elected official, which was nothing other than raking money in hand over fist. Not for the people of, not, you know, not for charitable purposes, not to help give people a hand up, not a hand out, but for his own reelection purposes. And then Herman Cain, nothing. I mean, it is heartbreaking and devastating to see whom it is in our society that the media and that the left and some on the right, even when it comes to those that are supposed to be examples for the African-American community, whom it is that they put their spotlight on and whom it is they leave in the dark. So I want to talk a little bit about that here. I've got audio and it's from a film called Uncle Tom. Or a documentary, and it is about the way that conservative, independent-thinking African Americans are treated in this country by Democrats and the media and left-wing activists, and just how horribly they're treated. I want a great homeloan.com. Don, very informative about the whole loan process. Quick to answer any questions that came up along the way. Another good communication from Ryan. Everyone was so nice. It was painless, simple. Every question answered. Anytime we needed help with anything, we got it. We definitely will be using y'all again in the future. And Caitlin saying, Don and Alex, great to work with. Excellent communication. Made the process seamless. Listen, if you're a realtor and you want your clients to have that sort of experience, then you need to recommend iwantagreathomeloan.com. And I understand if you're like, well, you know, I want to experience it for myself, or at least, you know about it more. Contact Don, have lunch with him, ask if you can just swing by the office and say you want to know about what he does and how he does it, because the last thing you need are clients that at the last minute have their loan fall through or some sort of problem occur, and you know, they don't know who to call or who to contact. iwantagreathomeloan.com. That's iwantagreathomeloan.com. Now, Herman Cain was born in the mid-40s, Memphis, Tennessee. His mom was a cleaning lady and his dad was a chauffeur. And a barber. And a janitor all at once. Cain said that growing up, his family was poor but happy, and his mother taught him, this is so important, success was not a function of what you start out with materially, but what you start out with spiritually. He would grow up, his dad would scrape and save to where they could finally buy a house and put his two kids through school. Herman Cain would get a degree in mathematics from Morehouse College, 1967. Earned a master's degree in computer science from Purdue University while working as a mathematician in the Department of the Navy. He worked as a business analyst for the Coca-Cola Company. In 1977, he joined the Pillsbury Company, and within 3 years, at the age of 34, think about some of the 34-year-olds today. This is in the 70s, African-American, age 34, rose to the position of Vice President of Corporate Systems and Services. He would leave his senior position to start another career path, restaurant industry, started on the ground up by making hamburgers at Pillsbury's Burger King division. 9 months later, he was managing. 9 months later, starting from the ground level, 9 months later, you hear people talk about, I need government minimum wage, I need to make more money. In 9 months, he worked his way up to managing 400 Burger King units in the Philadelphia region. When he was put in that position, they were the country's poorest performers of all the Burger Kings in the nation. Within 3 years, his region earned the reputation for excellence and was the company's best in the nation. Then in 1986, Pillsbury appointed him to the presidency of the then financially troubled Godfather's Pizza. See, they saw what he did. He performed. Turn around those Burger Kings. They said, we want you to run Godfather's. They're performing poorly. In 14 months, under his leadership, the chain regained profitability. In 1988, he led his executive team in a buyout of the company from Pillsbury. Then in 1988, Herman Cain was elected to the board of directors of the National Restaurant Association. In 1994 to 5, he served as chairman of the board of directors. While leading that association, he developed the organization into a pro-business voice via national debates and speeches concerning health care reform, employment policies, and taxation. A lot of people, their very first introduction to Herman Cain was when Bill Clinton was proposing socialized medicine known as Hillary Care. And he was doing a town hall meeting, and Herman Cain was one of those individuals that stood up and explained to the president in an extremely respectful manner why it was that his numbers were wrong, telling him, this isn't going to work. We're going to have to lay off people. He would be appointed to serve as the Economic Growth and Tax Reform Commission, serving as chairman and member of the board of directors for the Federal Reserve Bank in Kansas City. And he would become a senior advisor in 1996 to the Dole Kemp campaign for the presidency. It's really weird for a party that's so racist. He would continue his responsibilities as president and chairman of Godfather's Pizza while beginning a second career delivering national keynote speeches. Using the messages of the foundation, he created his own leadership consulting company called The New Voice, Inc. In 1996, he became CEO and president of the National Restaurant Association, thus becoming the only volunteer chairman to also become the organization's full-time CEO and president while still a member of the board. He held that position for 2.5 years. After his 2011 run for the presidency, he formed Cain Solutions Revolution, working with political and business leaders at the national level to promote problem-solving policy ideas. In 2012, he was tapped by Cox Media Group to succeed Neil Bortz. Of course, we carried his show here as well until he moved on from that. All this time, incidentally, he served as an associate minister at Antioch Baptist Church in Atlanta. Now, my point's not to disparage the memory of John Lewis, but it is more to highlight the priorities of people that are in charge of setting a standard, if you will, or a narrative about what sort of person should be seen as a success in this country, and what sort of behavior should be looked at as behavior that is actually beneficial versus self-serving, meaningful. And all the articles I poured through regarding John Lewis's career as a member of Congress, none listed his accomplishments as a member of Congress. Well, they mentioned that he refused to go to George Bush's inauguration because he didn't think that was a legitimate election, and that he refused to go to Donald Trump's inauguration because he didn't think that was a legitimate election, but caught none. And then Herman Cain, yet who is it that we're told we should look to as some sort of example? I want to play coming up here. We're going to take just about 4 minutes and get Don Luzader's update on the news. I'm going to play, we'll make it even shorter than that, because I know he has to run over to KTTS. But I want to play just a short bit of audio from Herman Cain that gives you a glimpse into his personality, because I know some of you may not be familiar with him, and it's important that a person like this is known and remembered. Don Luzader with the latest news update.
Good morning. Voters in Missouri say yes to a constitutional amendment to expand Medicaid to cover thousands of more low-income folks. The current program does not cover most adults without children, and its income eligibility threshold for parents is one of the lowest in the nation at about one-fifth of the poverty level. Several money issues getting a thumbs up from voters in the Ozarks and Springfield. Question one passed easily, authorizing the city to impose a fee for a short-term loan establishment permit. Voters say yes to a 10-cent tax levy for full-time staffing of the Southern Dallas County Fire Protection District, and voters up in the Conway area approving a property tax levy extension for roads. A 12th person has died from COVID-19 in Greene County. The Springfield Greene County Health Department says a man in his 80s is the latest victim. He had underlying health problems. And that is the latest news.
KTTS First Alert Forecast, sponsored by St. Clair, the Ozarks Home Improvements. Cannot recommend enough. The all-Missouri-made windows, sunny, high near 80 today, a low of 62 tonight. Slight chance of showers, storms early tomorrow. High of 84. Friday, showers, thunderstorms possible with a high of 86. The current temperature is 61. I want to read, you know, something I don't do enough of is read to you some reviews of folks who have been wise enough and fortunate enough to use the services of Emily Johnson of Rhodes Real Estate. Caroline saying Emily is an excellent, knowledgeable realtor. She worked with us to make our home buying and selling process as smooth as possible, even during a pandemic. I highly recommend Emily for all of your real estate needs. We are now in a beautiful new home, and our previous home sold within 6 hours. Dina saying that Emily helped make the selling of our home a good one. Once we agreed on a price, it sold in 2 days. If you're looking for a great realtor, look no further. Emily Johnson is the one you want. She's professional, keeps you in the loop every step, and is so nice. That's true. I highly recommend her. That's what you get with Emily Johnson Rhodes Real Estate. I look forward to the next time that I sell and buy a home. See, the last time I did it, it was before I had the fortune of knowing Emily Johnson. I was robbed of that. But the day will come, and I will look forward to having the exact same experience I know she provides so many of you. Emily Johnson, Rhodes Real Estate, 890-1455, and you can find and like her on Facebook. And you can read people's reviews there. And you know what? You can, you know, send them messages, ask them, hey, you know, I saw what you posted. Did you really mean it? And you can have a conversation about it. Now, I want to play a bit of audio. Prager University had put out a documentary called Uncle Tom, and I haven't seen it. I'm not familiar. Or I know of it, and I know what it's about. It's a documentary that interviews, talks with, and highlights the experiences of independent-thinking African-Americans and the way that they are treated for not thinking the way that they are told to think. You know, Condoleezza Rice, in an interview in the last few days, highlighted the problem with the left is that they tell black people what to think, what they're supposed to think. There is a clip out of, you know, much of the conversations that they have with individuals, and one of them is Herman Cain. And it's just a couple minutes long, but I wanted to play it for you.
I had a college student ask me one time, how did you deal with color and race when you were climbing the corporate ladder? My answer, I didn't. Let them deal with it. I didn't focus on that. I didn't have time. I went to the president of the Pillsbury Company and said, I need to get involved in some other aspects of the corporation because I want to run one of the business units one day. So he said, we need a lot of leadership in Burger King. You have to go and spend 2 weeks at Whopper College. That really is a Whopper College in Miami. I graduated summa cum laude. I was working for the Department of the Navy. The same day that I started, another white gentleman named Robert started working there also. We had very similar jobs. So the first 12 months, I got outstanding performance 4 quarters in a row. Second year, outstanding performance 4 quarters in a row. And Robert got outstanding performance. But Robert was getting his GS salary increase at least 2 months sooner than me. So I went to Wayne, my supervisor, and said, Robert and I are both doing a great job. He said, yeah. So why is he getting little increases quicker than me? He said, he has a master's degree. I said, oh, it's not because he's white? Nope. He has a master's degree. So you know what I did? I didn't get mad. I went and got me a master's degree.
There are only 4 rungs to this ladder.
Went back. Sat down with Wayne. I said, well, I got a master's degree. I said, the next time you have opening for a promotion, I said, keep me in mind. See you around. And not long after that, they had a special project called a rocket-assisted projector. They had to have someone who was going to be the GS-13 supervisory mathematician to do the special ballistics on this rocket-assisted projector. I got the promotion. And I had 8 white people working for me.
It was all about performance, not the color of your skin. So since I now had that master's degree and I had proved myself, I got the job. When I decided to leave Dalberg, never forget the department head, and he called me in for an exit interview. And I never forget Russ. I think he's deceased now. He said, "You know, you have taught me something." I said, "What?" He said, "I had never worked with a black person before. You taught me don't judge somebody by the color of their skin."
That is a clip from the documentary from Prager University, Uncle Tom. That, of course, a clip with Herman Cain there. And of course, the bulk of that and the obvious part about it is that you had an individual starting in the 60s. And he was born in the mid-40s, but, you know, as an adult and into the mid and upper 60s. Did not allow race to be an issue in his success. He even mentioned there, he was asked by a student once, you know, how do you deal with race and race relations? He says, "I don't. I let other people deal with that. I don't have time for that." And he didn't. And he showed that it doesn't matter, even if there are racist people in the country. You don't have to let it stop you. And it is a horrific, horrible, awful shame that we have a culture which is, if you want to categorize it, ideologically on the left and an entire political party that convinces people that because of their skin color, they cannot do what it was that Herman Cain and so many others have done. But I think an equally as important and perhaps even more important takeaway in today's environment was the very last thing that he said there. And it was a supervisor of his that, he had a long-term relationship with and he would end up getting promoted under and would one day tell him, you know, "I learned from you. I learned not to judge a book by its cover." Now, I don't know whether that individual, Wayne, as he referenced, was somebody that was racist or what his previous thought was. But clearly, Herman Cain, in his actions, caused a mind shift to occur in that supervisor. One that was more in the direction of equality. And here's what I want you to just to think about. In terms of meaningful results, in terms of what I think most people want, and that is where people appreciate each other for who they are, respect one another equally. When it comes to achieving that goal, what do you think is the more successful way to go about it? The way that Herman Cain did? Or by burning down stores? By kneeling as a multi-million dollar basketball player? By telling white people that they're privileged? By guilting an entire race of individuals and telling them if they don't support your slogans and your cause that they are just as bad as violent individuals? By tearing down national monuments and burning flags. By attacking police officers and calling for the defunding of police. How many people on the sidelines do you think see that and then decide, you know what? I've just learned not to judge a book by its cover. And I've had a mind shift for the better towards equality. I am very big into meaningful results and identifying what is the goal and is what one is doing getting towards achieving that goal. we should focus more on the people like Herman Cain and less like any of these people that scream in the streets, that wear Black Lives Matter t-shirts, that kneel, because they do not make progress. People like Herman Cain did. Not just for himself, but in advancing the people around him who watched him, who saw what he did, who saw the sort of person he was. And they respected that. And they learned from that. Something that screaming, yelling, and name-calling never achieves. Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed. I don't have the audio of it on hand. I wish I did. One of my favorite stories that Herman Cain told, and I don't even know where he told this, but it was about when he was a kid and his mom took him and his brother to, I think it was a department store. They were somewhere, and there was a White's water fountain, and you know, one that said White's and one that said Colors. And of course, he knew. I think even he said that his mom was like, you know, do not drink from the White's only water fountain. And he had grown up hearing that, and he always wondered what was so special about it. And so one day, he and his brother, I think it was at a department store, decided that they were gonna get a drink from the White's only water fountain. And you know, he did it, and the thought that immediately entered his mind was that water does not taste any better than the water fountain from, you know, the water from the water fountain for the, you know, those of us that are in the colored category. He was confused, like, well, I don't understand. There's no difference between these waters. I want to touch on a couple of other things here this morning. Claire McCaskill once again making Missouri very proud. She has become a mouthpiece for the media. After the announcement that the United States is planning on drawing down a number of troops stationed in Germany, former U.S. ambassador to Germany Rick Grenell answered a critic of the move who stated that the action was not made as part of a strategy or a threat assessment. And he replied, it may not be your assessment, but it was planned and it will be implemented by the Pentagon. Times change. That response triggered Claire Bear, who now serves as an NBC News and MSNBC analyst, to write the following sneering reply. Quote, of all the sycophants and unqualified folks surrounding Trump, why do I find this guy particularly repugnant? Because he was given real jobs and didn't have a clue? Now, he responded by pointing out that she actually voted to confirm him. But I thought, you know, it's always fun to imagine how a story would be presented or what questions would be asked if roles were reversed. So if this were Obama making this move and it were, and Grenell were a Democrat and you had Ted Cruz or any Republican that would remark in this similar fashion. Now, I could tell you right now what the headline instead would be. Republican senator attacks first openly homosexual cabinet member, calling him a sycophant. And you would have all sorts of questions by other Democrats openly wondering, why is it that such and such Republican has a problem with the first openly homosexual drug? I mean, Claire Bear, is that your problem? Calling the first openly homosexual cabinet member in the history of the country repugnant? I mean, that's a word that's oftentimes used by homophobes Is there some sort of dog whistling going on here? Some sort of secret language going on here, to use a word commonly used by LGBT people, that being repugnant, for her to use that to describe the first openly homosexual cabinet member in the history of the country? Seems pretty homophobic to me. Now, you think that this is a stretch. Last week had this story, Minnesota, I think it was. There was some fundraiser going on, and a fire chief, you know, dressed up, put on a curly blonde wig and so forth in the dunk tank. And then people are like, hey, you look like the Secretary of Health, which happens to be a transgender. And so, of course, it immediately became transphobia. Why? Well, because the person that they were making fun of was in that particular category. So it is not that's exactly what would happen if roles were reversed with Claire McCaskill. Glenn Beck coming up next. I'm Nick Reed.